south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's talk about one of the most popular points of discussion for all expats down here in Latin America, or gonna-bes and wannabes. That is, doing business once you get down. Now, today I'm going to talk about two very profitable, almost no-brainer businesses that you could do down here and make a lot of money, but I wouldn't recommend them. Sounds crazy, right? But it's true. But I say don't do it, even though both of these businesses are easy to get into and very cheap for a startup. In fact, you could get started in each one of these businesses for less than $5,000. And yes, they're both totally legal and with tremendous profit margins. Even so, I can't say I recommend them. That is, unless you're strictly about making money and that's it. Now, I talk about the fact that when you get boots on the ground down here, all kinds of business ideas start popping in your head, practically from day one. So what about the two businesses I'm talking about right now? Do they qualify? Well, one kind of qualifies, and the other one, well, you have to be down here a long time before you stumble on that one or the opportunity stares you right in the face. So why am I bringing this up if I don't recommend either one of them? Well, because we're talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great here in Latin America. And today's lesson? There's always a catch to easy money, and things aren't always what they seem. Now, many years ago when I first got down here, it was well before the internet, and therefore, there were no IT-based businesses at all, naturally. So, back then, any kind of business a gringo or expat would get into would have to be brick and mortar. Or at least you'd have to have some kind of workspace or office. And nowadays, whatever business you get into, you have some kind of internet presence, a website, probably Facebook and Twitter. Facebook. You longtime listeners know I could give a zuck about that. Anyway, to do business anywhere these days, you'll need at bare bones minimum an email address, a bank account, and most likely a PayPal account too. Yes, PayPal, the company everyone loves to hate. Who hasn't had a problem with them? Don't get me started on that. Which is why I highly recommend if you have a business, you should accept Bitcoin. Oh, and you longtime listeners probably remember that I recommended Bitcoin when it was under $100. I'll bet over the last couple of years I've mentioned Bitcoin on the show at least 20 times. I mentioned over and over that you just might want to have some of it. And today it's hovering at around $1,700. You know, a lot of people tell me, Johnny, this thing's going nowhere. It's not part of the system. It's not backed by anything like anybody's fiat money in the world is. They said it was a joke. They said it was foolish. They were saying all this when it was around 100. All I can say is I'm not going to say I told you so. Well, talk about the one that got away. But did it really get away? I just spoke to a Bitcoin genius, and I have only used that word twice in my life about people I know. He says an upside of 5 to 10,000 is quite reasonable. Hey, you know, just passing that information on to you. Remember, he's the guy that told me to get in at 11. And I didn't, and I waited. Look, it's not like you had to drop 10, 20, or 50 grand at one crack like a franchise fee. You could buy one or 100 or a fraction of one. But let's not rub it in. Anyway, on a similar subject, the other day, guess what? I was talking to a gringa expat. She told me that she used to listen to her mother and father talk about the one that got away. She was from Wisconsin, remembered her mom and dad had a chance to buy into a business back in 1960 called McDonald's. She said back then the cost of a franchise was around $12,000, about $100,000 in today's funny money. Well, for whatever reason, they decided not to do it. For them, that was the one that got away. And for this young gringa lady, Bitcoin was the one that got away because she says she has a nerdy computer geek girlfriend who's been talking about it, trying to get her to buy in since it was 40, and she never did. But then again, maybe it isn't the one that got away, right? Oh, and I should mention that a McDonald's franchise today costs between $1 million and $2.2 million. And I highly recommend you see that new movie that's out. It's called The Founder, the story of Ray Kroc, played by Michael Keaton. He's the one, you know, that turned McDonald's into the pathetic monster it is today. You know, the guy was such a jerk. He was always at war and fighting with his own partners, the McDonald's brothers, who created the whole concept. Turns out, through the whole movie, you're actually rooting for the McDonald's brothers, even though they're pretty much creators of the fast food, junk food jungle that set the norms for obesifying the planet. Yet in the movie, you're actually rooting for them, as if they were the underdogs. Which is quite a feat, huh? So do see it. You won't regret it. But where were we? Oh, yeah. Right now, I'd say about a third of expats who have businesses have virtual businesses on the net. Some offering services, of course, but others selling a physical product like orchids, designer coffee, leather goods, you name it. Well, the beauty of it is that someone else, usually the local Latin or indigenous producers, will warehouse, store it, inventory, even ship it for you. So in many cases, you can run your business from your computer anywhere, because it's other people with their facilities who are doing your manufacturing, storage, inventory, packaging, and even shipping. You see, once you've had boots on the ground a while, and you find a product or products you know will sell in the first world or elsewhere, you just make a deal with who's ever producing it for the local market. Of course, you'll add your own first world touches, details, and quality control. In other words, in so many cases I've seen, you're strictly marketing and sales, and outside contractors are manufacturing and assembling and doing everything else. You'd be amazed how well that system works here in Latin America. And why it works so well, or works at all, is because the average person down here makes between $250 and $350 bucks a month. And oftentimes out in the boonies, much less than that. Which is why it's almost impossible to transfer the manufacturing and assembly process to anywhere up in the first world. The numbers would never work. Why? Because automatically you'll be paying first world rents, first world salaries, along with insurance and benefit packages and all that. That just don't exist down here in Latin America. And you know, it's a microcosm of the problem that the U.S. has right now in general. The manufacturing that's left the U.S. will never come back, no matter what Trump or anyone else promises. Again, because the numbers just won't work. I mean, really. When the Chinese get, what's it, $1 or $2 an hour at most to make iPhones, and under Trump that work is supposed to come back to the States? Come on. How would you feel about paying double what you're paying now for all your Apple products? And of course, one of the biggest industries in the world is the automotive industry. And guess what? Right now, South Korea, a supposedly first world country, exports more cars than any other country of its size. Average auto worker's salary there, $5.60 an hour. With benefits, around $10 an hour. That's less than what waiters and waitresses with liberal arts master's degrees make at Starbucks. So then what's a U.S. auto worker entry-level wage? $16 an hour. With benefits, over $30 an hour. Come on, if anybody really believes big manufacturing is going to come back to the U.S., when in the rest of the world, skilled laborers are gladly willing to take between $2 and $10 an hour, who's drinking the Kool-Aid now? By the way, for cars made in the U.S., 25% of the cost is labor, which means a $20,000 car has $5,000 in labor built into it. And in South Korea, you know, where they make Kia, Hyundai, and some others, labor costs around 10%. So a $20,000 car there, just $2,000 in labor. Which means for an equivalent car, they could drop their price by $3,000 and not even feel it. And talk about China. They're coming on strong with their automotive industry. Experts are predicting their cars will be just as good as South Korean cars and Japanese cars and U.S. cars within 5 years, following the same trend as those Korean companies who started out exporting cars to the States in the 90s, and Americans didn't quite trust them. Their quality control sucked, but they were cheap, so some did sell. It took about 10 years for them to solve their growing pains and technical problems, but now they're winning awards. The same pattern repeats as Chinese cars enter the stateside market. People don't quite trust them, but they're much cheaper. They've got quality control problems. They're not winning any awards yet, and the critics are bashing them, but they are selling, as did Japanese cars like Toyota, Honda, and Nissan back in the 70s and the 80s, when they were considered pretty much laughable little toys. But no one would ever say that about a Honda, Mazda, or Toyota today, would they? So, bottom line, Chinese cars are soon to be world-class quality like Japanese and Korean cars now, and their labor costs between 4 and 5% of the car's value. That means when the U.S. makes a car for $20,000, the Chinese can make that same car for $16,000. Actually, analysts are saying more like $12,000 because the cost of the car's raw materials at the source in China are so much cheaper. And then there's India. They'll be the next big manufacturing machine. They've got the talent, and now you see their cars and trucks appearing everywhere. And of course, they've flooded the world with those disgustingly annoying tuk-tuks. So with all that in mind, only an uninformed idiot, i.e. politician, could ever think that the U.S. could possibly return to its former manufacturing glory. You know, those purulent carbuckles, they need to read a book called Engineering Economics. But they won't. Not enough pictures, too many graphs and figures, but they're not big bottom hourglass figures. Oh, by the way, speaking of cars, in today's breaking news coming out of Argentina, the headline says, former Vice President of Argentina, Armando Baudou, will stand trial today, during which he will become the first former Vice President to testify in Argentina's history. He's being accused of falsifying the documents of cars he purchased, falsifying names, addresses, and engine VIN numbers linked to the Ministry of Economy's irregular purchase of 19 luxury cars, many of which he ultimately took possession of. It says here, they've found false signatures and street addresses that don't actually exist, as well as false DPIs. Those are national identity documents. In fact, one of them has an address that has no house or apartment, but is just a sand dune on the beach. Yes, politics the world over draws out the sociopaths and the maggots. Nope, there is no cure for the brain disease they have, but there is a kind of a remedy. Term limits. 2 terms. 1 term in office and 1 term in prison. I'll vote for that. How about you? Though I digress again, but just a little. Point being, gringos and expats down here doing their plan B who have businesses. Well, about a third of them are strictly IT businesses with no inventory or manufacturing at all. And the rest a mix of IT and brick and mortar, mostly brick and mortar. Oh, and I should throw in the fact that about half of all gringos and expats I know eventually have some kind of business here. Yep, even the ones that say they're fully retired and they're never going to work again. They say their plans are just to relax, take it easy, sit by the beach and suck on umbrella drinks. Yep, that's what many of them say when they first get down here, then talk to them a year later and they've changed their tune. Suddenly they're doing something that makes money. They're in some kind of business. Not necessarily because they have to, it's just that they've found a niche or two, identified some opportunity. They want to stay busy, so why not make a few bucks, quetzales, colones, lempiras, Bitcoin, or pesos at the same time? You know, with most expats, except some of them coming off government jobs, that's in their makeup. Though a lot of them, when they first get down, will deny ever wanting to get back in the game. You know, I could talk all day about having all that extra time on your hands. You know, you got a cleaning lady, maintenance guy, whatever. Imagine never having to do laundry, dishes, house cleaning, or gardening again. Extra time on your hands to sit around and do nothing. What a concept, huh? I guess it's that contradictory thing about human nature. Especially since every one of us has said probably countless times, man, I wish there were more hours in the day. That way, we'd have time to do even more and work longer and harder, huh? And when you occasionally hear about the odd person who can get by on 2, 3, or 4 hours of sleep a night, at first you wonder, how could that be? Then comes that tinge of envy. We all know people who said they just dream someday of doing nothing. But the thing is, gringos and expats who end up down here in Latin America, they say that while they're still up in the States and on their treadmills. But you see, they're almost always the motivated, let's do it, creative thinking types that end up coming down and doing their plan B. And they're the same people that talk about needing more leisure and vacation time, and when they get it, well, it works for a little while to recharge the batteries. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to change the speed of your internal motor. As you probably know already, creative thinking types always need something to do. Their mind's always active. Yep, they have to do something, and if it's not constructive, it could be destructive. Think not? Then you ought to head down to Costa Rica and check out all those case-a-day, beer-drinking, so-called retired gringos. Yep, even gringos who make it down to Latin America for vacation. I see it all the time. They're sitting at the beach, reading books, paper, or Kindle, and plugging away at their devices. So many of them are still tied to their offices up in the States and making deals. That said, here's what I've observed about Latins in that situation. When I'm at the beach or a beach resort, and there are a lot of people laying around sucking up the sun and some drinks too, I almost never see a Latin person reading a book. Now, in the last few weeks, I've been to a few busy Latin beach resorts. And in that time, after seeing hundreds of people just laying around catching some sun, I only observed, now get this, two Latin people reading books. And one of them happened to be a law student from Medellin, Colombia, doing her homework. And remember, we're talking about upscale Latins, the ones that are able to afford to go to a resort. That would be the top 3 to 5% of the population. Supposedly, the high-end and the educated. Well, high-end, yes. Educated, no. And digressing a bit more, I have to say that long-term expats and gringos sometimes make the comment that it's very difficult to find a Latin person they can have a deep and profound conversation with. Which is why expat Eddie always says, if you're an introverted stateside American, or if you have any kind of inferiority complex, Latin America will cure you of all that. Now, Eddie, you know, is a very successful entrepreneur, many, many restaurants and franchised out. He's a self-depreciating guy, describes himself as not brilliant, not even smart, but just average, practical, and a guy who writes things down. He's had a lot of Latin employees over the years. And he maintains the number one bad habit that Latins have that'll always keep them from ever approaching, quote, first world standards, is that they do not write things down. They don't make lists. They don't carry a pen or a pad or even a bar napkin to write on. He says he's driven with many upscale Latins in their own cars, and they've got all kinds of other useless junk and garbage, but you'd think they'd have a pen, one that works. Funny thing, Eddie says, they write fantastic resumes, works of art sometimes. He means, of course, Latins applying for supervisory or management jobs, ones that have had some college. In fact, Eddie swears they must have a mandatory resume course at every university. Or how else could they crank out those things so beautifully done? Bottom line, he says, that's one thing they excel at, although you can never check their references or past employment histories. In Latin America, that's almost impossible. In fact, Eddie says more than once he's looked a candidate dead in the eye and said, man, if you're half as good as this resume, you can have my job and I'll work for you. Anyway, Eddie says the very first thing he teaches his supervisors and managers is that they must carry a pad with a pen that works and they must take notes. So do they get the point? Well, they do in the moment, but then it fades away again, he says. So you just have to keep pressing it. But I did start off this segment talking about two great businesses to get into that I would never recommend for gringos and expats. Sounds crazy, huh? And again, the only way to plan a business here in Latin America is to get some boots on the ground. You can't do it from up there in Toronto or Cleveland. Well, you can, but most people who do without the boots on the ground part misfire badly, make a lot of mistakes, lick their wounds, and move on. And speaking of boots on the ground, I got to get this plug in there. You've got about 2 more weeks, as this show's going out on May 14, to sign up and get the early bird discount for my July 2017 Expat Insider Seminar, being held in and around Guatemala again, and 90% of the time will be so far off the gringo tourist trail, the only first world people we might run into would be backpackers and do-gooders. Go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. And while you're there, check out the famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar trips. And I'll tell you, if you're looking for business ideas, you just have to go on those trips. Also, you heard me say it takes about a month to get your paperwork together up in the States to apply for permanent or temporary residency in Guatemala if you're planning on killing two birds with one stone. So, don't wait till the last minute. Sign up before June 1st. That'll give you a little over a month to get your paperwork together if you're planning on going for residency. A very good idea, especially since those rules are changing all the time, and by next year, guaranteed there'll be more hoops to jump through. Not just in Guatemala, but in all Latin countries. And finally, if you just can't get boots on the ground right now, your next best bet is to take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com and be sure to put the www in there because I've been told that sometimes if you don't put it in, it doesn't like to connect. Once you're there, you'll get 3 free videos. Yep, I said videos. Check it out and find out how to get all your ducks lined up for your own Plan B. And finally, go to the newexpat.com website and download my Plan B consultation questionnaire, the one I use when I do phone and Skype consultations with people. It'll give you a nice set of guidelines to follow if you're thinking about discussing different aspects of your own Plan B with me on a phone consult. So download it and have a look at the newexpat.com website. Now, you know, I've mentioned tuk-tuks before. They're one of the four big things India's noted for, right behind call centers, curry, and the Karma Sutra. Now, if you travel the world much, you'd think they've penetrated everywhere. I'm talking about tuk-tuks now. All right. If you get any kind of boots on the ground out in the boonies here in Latin America, you'll know that when you spot a tuk-tuk way in the middle of nowhere, there's got to be a town within 3 to 5 kilometers. Now, if you have a lot of boots on the ground, you'll notice there are a lot of small and medium-sized towns that do not have tuk-tuks at all. The question is, why some towns and not others? So then who notices those things and who even cares? Well, gringos looking for business opportunities, of course. Every once in a while, some recently arrived expats with some boots on the ground will call me up, send me an email, whatever, and say, "Hey, Johnny, I've located a couple of towns that don't have tuk-tuks and could surely support a fleet. Does that mean there's a niche? Is it a good business? Can I make some money?" Yep, it's million question time for Johnny, which is why I do all those phone consultations, by the way. Well, first of all, if your Spanish sucks, you're not going to find out that pertinent information on your own. And you know, coincidentally, I actually did all the research on doing the tuk-tuk thing myself. And some years ago, I noticed the same thing. There are many, many little towns that don't have tuk-tuks. So I found out where to buy the things, where to get parts, get them maintained, got my friendly Latin lawyer involved to figure out the permits you'd need. And man, what a business. Listen to this. The way it works out best, you buy the tuk-tuks and you rent them out by the day to local drivers. They supply the gas and those things get around 70 miles to the gallon. And you supply the maintenance, which means you just do a contract or some kind of deal with a local motorcycle mechanic. You set up the routes, pay the licenses, cheap as dirt. You put out the word with the locals that you're looking for tuk-tuk drivers and they'll be standing at your door 10 deep the next day. And here's the deal. You buy a brand new tuk-tuk for, let's say, $4,000. And you rent it out. The driver pays you normally around $15 a day. I figured a tuk-tuk would be in service about 300 days a year. So that means for just one tuk-tuk, you'll theoretically make around $4,500 a year. Then you subtract, let's say, $500 a year in maintenance. That means your tuk-tuk's paid for in 1 year. 100% return on your investment. Simply amazing. A license to steal. Who in the world gets a return like that on a legal business? So what could go wrong? Well, you do a test first. Buy a few tuk-tuks. Get the routes going. All right, so some years ago, I investigated all that, did the numbers. And at the last minute, I did not go through with it. And since then, about every 6 months or so, some gringo gets a hold of me, has the bright idea of doing exactly the same thing. And then I explained to him what I just told you, saving the best for last, which is something I found out from sending my gardener slash maintenance guy out to personally get the scoop from tuk-tuk drivers himself. Turns out, with practically every tuk-tuk business, there's extortion. Even in the nicest, cleanest little towns and barrios, where people are tough on crime and sometimes a guy will beat up his kid in front of everyone in the town square just because he stole some candy at the local tienda. Well, it doesn't matter. In the tuk-tuk business, extortion is everywhere. And it works because the tuk-tuk drivers pick up everyone. And a bad guy that wants to extort will jump in a tuk-tuk, tell the driver he's got to pay $25 or $50 a month, or bad things will happen to him, his family, or the tuk-tuk. The bad guys live somewhere in the local area, right? And so does the tuk-tuk driver and his family. And that means every time you see one of those smelly, noisy tuk-tuks, the driver's getting extorted for $25 to $50 a month. And I understand in Mexico, it could be double that. So there you have it, a fantastic little business that'll produce up to 100% return on your money. One, you don't have to manage yourself or keep close tabs on at all. Yet, I don't recommend you even try to get into it. Sure, you could do it. You're a gringo. You could beat the pants off of any competition. Chances are, you won't even have any competition. You could be the tuk-tuk king. But the sad fact is, you don't want to be around guys that are being extorted. Because the next line in that path leads right to you, doesn't it? And you know, a couple of years ago, I mentioned the tuk-tuk business, but apparently not enough listeners heard that show because still, just last week, two gringos who've been down maybe 7 or 8 months now, they had this great idea they wanted to talk to me about. So we met at a little coffee shop. They showed me a map of three faraway little towns, each had around 15,000 people. They said, "See this, Johnny? We just hired a lawyer and we're going to bring tuk-tuks to these three towns." Yep, unlike any Latin American I've ever seen, they actually had a business plan. Had the numbers nicely calculated. Great presentation, great enthusiasm. Till I asked them what their plan was when the extortions start coming. They looked surprised, and then I did a little news search on the internet in Spanish. I quickly pulled up a few articles where tuk-tuk drivers had been extorted and shot for refusing to pay. Now, how would these two gringos have ever pulled up those articles? Since the only place you're ever going to see that kind of news is on the Spanish language news sites. So again, great business on paper, problematic in real life. Oh, and a lot of times, you know, there'll be a small town of maybe 3,000 or 4,000 people and another town of 15,000, maybe 3 to 5 kilometers away. And the tuk-tuks will work the little towns and they'll stream between both cities. So there's a long stretch of boonies between these two towns. And that's where the extortionists like to hang, far enough out away from the action where they can do their dirty business without being seen by onlookers. And still, it turns out when there are openings for tuk-tuk drivers, there are lines of people waiting to get the job, even though they know they're going to get nicked by extortionists. Well, just like mob extortionists in the restaurant business up in the States, drivers down here just figure it's a cost of doing business. So they build it into their rate structure and pay up, like a tax. In fact, exactly like a tax, because isn't it a fact that taxes are exactly that? Government's extorting dough, and if you don't pay up, bad things will follow. Oops, we're getting towards the end now. Tune in next show, and I'll tell you about a fantastic business idea. It'll make you a ton of money. It's amazingly cheap to get in. Tremendous profit margins. It's totally legal. But I don't recommend it for gringos or expats. Tell you about that one next time.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.